Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of NatureNow at kptz.org.
Hello, this is Debron Kelso, host of this edition of Nature Now for the third week of May. This week, we are very happy to be out on another field trip, especially with this glorious weather, with our good friend and neighbor, Dr. Jeff Hammerson, serving as our guide to look for bird nests. We're also very happy to have our good friend Meg Amos along as our recorder and field assistant. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Debron. It's great to be here.
We're always happy to have you.
And it's very much a pleasure for me to be here with both of you again.
Oh, hooray! We will be mostly focusing on the nests found in our neighborhood, a mixed woodland habitat just west of Port Townsend. But we're going to start with an overview of all types of bird nests that can be found in our general area. So it's such a beautiful time of year. What have you guys been seeing out there of late?
Oh, at our place, one of the main things, this doesn't have anything to do with birds, but I've noticed that the bumblebees that have been working hard visiting the salmonberry and red flowering currant blooms very intensively have switched over now to the rhododendrons that are peaking at our place and super abundant. We're lucky to have so many. And so those are just buzzing with bumblebees right now. So that's kind of one of the main shifts we've seen at home.
Oh, cool. You know, something that I noticed is that I hardly saw any newts crossing the road this year. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, they've been kind of scarce compared to past years, I'd say. And I don't know if it is because I haven't been around when it has rained, but in general, I would agree with you. So they seem to be hunkering down right now and not moving.
Well, and I'm wondering if it's because, you know, one of our neighboring ponds, Hank and Laura's on the corner, is mostly dry now. So if that should happen, what do newts do? Do they just hunker down and not breed for a year?
Yeah, they're extremely patient, actually. They spend most of their lives actually doing absolutely nothing. What I mean by that is they'll get under a log or under leaf litter or some other moist refuge and just wait for conditions to be favorable for going out and looking for little insects or worms to eat or moving to and from their breeding ponds. So I'm sure there have been some waves of movement from the forest into the ponds, but I don't know that they can sense if, let's say, where they bred last year is this year not containing enough water. Nobody really knows the answer to that, but there is like one neighbor's pond has permanent water in it, and I don't know why they wouldn't be heading toward that. So anyway, right now they're probably just waiting, and I suspect that some are already in the ponds and already laying eggs, mating and laying eggs. But yeah, I think that the ponds that are shallower and don't hold water so long, who knows? I don't know if they go there and kind of put their little legs on their hips and say, now what?
And it seems like there have been way more purple finches calling than usual. Have you noticed that?
Well, I wouldn't, at our place anyway, it seems like this time of year they're always just like singing like mad. And so I haven't really noticed that so much right where we are, but it all depends, of course, on, you know, the makeup of the forest. So here it's a little different than where we are. Yeah. So could be that it's not the same here as opposed to at our place.
Yeah, even though we live, you know, within a third of a mile, the habitat is quite different.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that was really interesting to me is that I found oyster mushrooms. I found them down on the beach on a dead alder, and a beautiful crop of oyster mushrooms. And I think of them as a fall mushroom, but in reading they said April through May are good for oyster mushrooms. So,
Nice.
Yeah.
Of course, you'd find oyster mushrooms on the beach. Right?
And in reading, they said if you can take home a piece of log that's inoculated with the fungi and have it fruit at your very own house.
So but where is it?
It was a little bit much of a stretch for me to haul from the beach. But
it's like a 10-foot log.
Well, any other news? We'll probably never get to bird nests if we carry on. It's always dangerous to open it up to
that. Don't get me started. I cross those off my list here of things that I was going to mention.
Oh, well, when we first got the idea for this program, we thought that we would review all types of bird nests in our area, but we soon decided this was way too big a topic to cover, even with a two-part show. We would be talking about bird nests for the rest of the year and roaming the countryside for weeks. But we decided for this time to mostly limit our discussion to the nests in the neighborhood where Jeff and I live, which is a fairly rural, mixed woodland area to the west of Port Townsend. And there are some very interesting nests to visit within a short walking distance. That said, we thought that we would start our discussion with a general overview of different nest types and nesting strategies. Maybe we should start on the ground. So a lot of birds just nest right on the ground, right?
Yeah, around here, the songbirds that I've found nesting on the ground have been mostly dark-eyed juncos and spotted towhees. They get either in the grass or sometimes under the sword ferns. Under the towhees, for example, could be under any kind of thick vegetation that goes all the way down to the ground level. And so it's hard to find those nests this time of year because the birds are sitting on their eggs and aren't delivering food yet. But those would be two common types of ground nests that you would find around this kind of habitat in many places around Port Townsend.
We were just talking before we started this show that we know that birds are nesting right now, but we've chosen actually a bad time of year to look for nests because the birds are so cagey. I mean, they're on, most of them, on eggs, and the times that you find them are when they've hatched out and when they're feeding young on the nest.
Yeah, in another few weeks, it's going to be really active, and you're going to start seeing lots of birds carrying food. And when they're doing that, they're not that secretive sometimes. You know, they're driven to get the food and get it to those nestlings, and so that's the time when it's easiest to find a nest for the songbirds.
And then the young are so vocal, too. I mean, remember a couple years ago, the way we found those downy woodpeckers is because the young were so loud. I mean, they were just all day long, they would yammer for food. Not here, but in other places, there are a bunch of ground nests, all of the shorebirds and those that inhabit the beach areas. Most of those are ground nests, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty hazardous environment to nest on the ground, too. I was been watching out at Point Hudson. There has been a pair of killdeer out there, and they have already attempted two different nests in March and April, and both of them failed. There's a lot of disturbance out there with people and dogs, and it's just a busy area, but they try to nest every year out there between the kind of parking lot for the RVs and the beach itself. There's a kind of a sandy, log-strewn, narrow area where they nest, and they've tried two nests so far this year, and both of those failed. They had eggs, but then disappeared. You know, whether they got spooked off by a person or whatever, the crows are out there always looking for things to eat, and so that's another risk when they get spooked off the nest. So anyway, so that's another ground nester that's pretty common locally.
Yeah. So then we have a bunch of nests in the shrub layer. again, they can be really hard to find. I mean, they're you know, cup nests, and some of them have got mud incorporated into them. And probably the most common one that we find are robin's nests, right?
Yeah, they're like anywhere from big shrubs to small trees. Song sparrow is very common and very secretive, tucked away in all these little secret spots that I know they're nesting like right next to our little cabin building at home. And I've been watching, but I haven't discovered where the nest is yet. Not until they start feeding the young. But right now they're always around. The male's always singing. And they're foraging all around there, so there's a nest there, but haven't found it yet. But they're shrub nesters. Black-headed grosbeaks have arrived from Mexico, and they nest also in kind of tall shrubbery or the lower parts of smaller trees sometimes. Kind of you have a blending from small shrubs, big shrubs, and then smaller trees, and a lot of birds will use that layer below the main upper canopy of a tree for nesting.
Something that really shocked me is to hear that Pacific slope flycatchers can sometimes be nesting on the ground, like under stumps and stuff. I think of them as higher in the canopy. Have you ever found Pacific slope flycatcher nests?
Yes, I have. And where I found them have been like on a steep slope, where there is a little indentation, let's say, in the bank. Might be beneath a fallen tree on a slope or something like that. And they'll use that little ledge, dirt ledge, and they'll build a nest in there. So that's like a natural site. And then every year they nest on our neighbor's property on structures. Ledges, like a railing on a deck, but with some cover around it, closer to, like, could be under the eaves of a building, and there might be a little wooden ledge there. They use those a lot, actually.
Oh, you know, you have certain preconceptions in your head, and they're so elusive, and I usually hear them up higher in the trees, yeah. So I think that that's where they should be nesting.
Yeah, but that's not it at all. Yeah, right. The males hang up there, and they're more vocal than the females, and so you hear them a lot, and you think, oh, I'm going to start looking up in the treetops, but that's not where they're going to nest. But that's a good place to sing and call.
Yep, that's right. So then we've got that gradation between the shrub layer and into the trees, and some of them nest really high up in the trees, right?
Yeah, like a good example around here would be Townsend's warbler. How appropriate.
Yes.
That like to nest pretty high up in the Douglas firs or other types of trees. That'd be a good example. Golden crowned kinglets. All these birds, though, if you looked at 100 nests, they would be over a pretty wide range of heights. But the tendency for some of these is to be higher than the kind of the shrubby layer in the lower canopy. And so you get the Townsend's warblers, maybe purple finches, maybe golden crowned kinglets that would tend to be higher up in the trees, or band-tailed pigeons, for example.
Yeah. I've just been starting to hear band-tailed pigeons here. I've been hearing them on the DNR property for a few days, but yesterday I heard them for the first time. And I heard a mourning dove, and I heard a European collared dove, too.
Yeah.
Which, as most of our radio audience knows, is an invasive species, but it doesn't seem to be really taking over nesting habitat. It doesn't seem to be as intrusive as a lot of invasive species.
Yeah, they're mostly around town and kind of your suburban settings around here. They don't probe into the more natural forest habitats that much. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But they do show up, though, occasionally out here.
And then we have a bunch of cavity nesters around here. I mean, which makes sense because we've got so many snags and we've got, you know, so many species of woodpeckers, right? We've got
pileated woodpeckers, we've got northern flickers, we've got downy woodpeckers, sapsuckers,
downies, hairies.
That's right.
Yeah, so all those woodpeckers, you know, they make their own cavities. So they dig into the wood and create cavities. And then other cavity nesters that are really common around here are red-breasted nuthatches and chestnut-backed chickadees. The nuthatches and chickadees aren't, they will excavate, but they're not really strong excavators the way a woodpecker is. So they'll make their own cavities sometimes, but often it'll be already started a little bit or a rotted out place in a tree. They need kind of softwood. Most woodpeckers use softwood too, but those little nuthatches and chickadees are able to create their own nesting habitat in softwood much easier.
And so we'll... Black-capped and chestnut-backed use the same type of habitat to form a nest?
Well, basically, around here it seems to me the black-capped chickadee is more associated with kind of residential areas or the edge of the forest or where there's a lot of deciduous trees. And where we are, there's a big conifer component. And that seems like that's the stronghold for the chestnut-backed chickadee, but they do overlap. I mean, they're both in the trees around our place, more so the chestnut-backed. As you go into town from here, then you start seeing more and more black-capped chickadees. Uh-huh. But they both use pretty small trees. They don't need a big cavity, so they can use much smaller trees than, let's say, a flicker or a pileated woodpecker need a big tree.
Yeah. And this would probably be a good place to interject that pileated woodpeckers, a lot of times people see those big slotted rectangular openings. They'll go, oh, there are lots of nesting potential, but they don't use those. Those are just feeding holes, and they'll actually make a conventional round hole, but it has to be in a pretty large tree to accommodate a pileated. And I was also reading that they can take like up to 6 weeks to form a nest.
Yeah, so they make a bigger one and it takes them much longer to do so, bigger cavity to nest in. It's a big bird, it's the size of a crow.
Yep.
Something like a downy woodpecker at the other end of the scale might only take a couple weeks to create a suitable nest cavity if it's got a good kind of soft-hearted wood to work with.
Yeah. Well, and the one that I had here, and I was reading also that they don't usually use the same nest in sequential years, but in my case they did. They used that teeny little willow snag 2 years in a row, and then it was taken over by nuthatches. And this year, I don't know. I'm waiting with bated breath to see if that little snag is occupied.
Yeah, you never say never in kind of biology or the life histories of animals. General tendency is birds tend not, with a few exceptions that are very common, but mostly birds don't reuse a nest or a nest cavity, but they sometimes do. And it's not that infrequent. Some species, it's pretty rare, but if you look at enough nests, you'll find some, oh, that one's being used again. It's not the norm. It's not that it's abnormal. It's just not as common as making a fresh nest. And a lot of it's about, of course, not nesting in a site that already has a bunch of parasites in it.
Yeah.
Or things that could harm the nestlings, which would be mostly parasites. So making a fresh nest is kind of like starting with a clean slate.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And there are also nests under tree bark. I learned that brown creepers nest under tree bark that's loose, and I was like, no way. So that's now my latest goal, is to find a brown creeper nest. Have you found any?
I have.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah, and it was in the classic situation. It was a big snag with peeling, thick peeling bark, and some of those some of the bark had sloughed off, but there are other pieces that were just kind of projecting outward, and they were, the brown creepers were going in and out from behind that piece of bark against the trunk of the tree, and they're carrying food in there, so they had nestlings, and they make like a little hammock type nest in that space. So that would be a classic example of a bird that tends not to nest in the same place in subsequent years, because probably next year that bark is going to fall off and they'll need to find a new situation that's similar to that.
It seems like that would be such a fragile place to...
Thank goodness they're small birds.
I know.
They don't create much,
not much weight
on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're like, I haven't found one this year. They're singing. The males are singing a lot around our neighborhood here, a couple places, but I haven't spotted a nest yet.
Well, when you do, let me know. I now am trying to get a search image going. So today when I was walking, I was studying and not finding suitable habitat. I mean, lots of trees, but not any that had bark that was peeling up enough that I reckoned would serve as a nesting site.
Yeah, another great example of the value of having some big old dead trees, snags, scattered around, because they provide resources that lots of kinds of birds and mammals use that wouldn't be able to live in that area in a forest that was just full of young, vigorous trees, for example. So good to have those dead trees around.
Yeah, yes, indeed. There are birds that make woven nests. We're going to go see later on a bush tent nest.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to overhear a friend describing an active bush tent nest that she had discovered. And so she told me approximately where it was, and I went and was able to find it. And so hopefully we'll go take a look at it sometime soon and see what its status is. When I took a quick peek at it, it seemed like probably there were eggs in there being incubated based on the fact that there was one bush tit around foraging in the trees nearby, but no visits to the nest and no indication that anything kind of was happening in there other than quiet incubation. So we'll see.
We'll see. So there are a bunch of birds that there also are different structures that are formed, like cups that are lined with hair and grass, and there are stick nests like with crows and eagles, and we have a really active eagle nest in our area, but we are not going to go visit that today. We're going to wait until next month. We're going to go do a site visit with our neighbors George and Julia and just focus on the eagles, because they have young this year, and it's been a really productive nest, and George and Julia have been really great at keeping notes about like when they start nesting and when they're on eggs and when they first see food being carried. Yeah, it will be really fun. There should be a lot to talk about. In terms of nesting strategies, we were talking about how a lot of birds make a new nest every year because of worrying about parasite loads. But some birds leave eggs in other birds' nests, right?
Like, the infamous brown-headed cowbird, which doesn't have the foggiest idea of how to make a nest or take care of youngsters or incubate eggs, and it relies absolutely entirely on other birds to incubate its eggs and raise its young. So that's the brown-headed cowbird. But other birds do that on occasion. There's quite a few, actually, but not so completely devoted to that. For example, wood ducks will often lay, the females will lay their eggs in the nests of other wood duck females. And there are some other ducks that do that. Some of the cuckoos do that, too. Around here, we don't have that going on, but the most extreme example is definitely the brown-headed cowbird.
Yeah, well, they are truly remarkable, and I'm getting Meg waving to tell me that we have run out of time for this month, and we haven't even left the back porch. What are we going to do? Well, that's it for Nature Now for this third week of May. But we are going to get out in the field next month. Thanks so much, Jeff, for being our guest, and to Meg Amos for being our recorder, and to Nora Petrus for serving as our sound editor, and to all of you for listening. And do you hear that loud sound in the background? That's a Wilson's warbler. That they are these teeny little bright yellow birds with a black cap. You're hearing the male just belting his heart out. So, closing music is a beautiful piece that I was thrilled to stumble across this week called Bird's Nest by the group The Fretless. As always, wishing you happy trails.